Hello. So welcome to Spilling the Tea with Talking Therapies. And my name is Dominic, and I am a high intensity therapist within the NHS Talking Therapy Service of Coventry, Warwickshire and Solihull Talking Therapies. And my role normally is to be helping and supporting people with common mental health difficulties in order to then overcome their difficulties through therapy. So I'm going to introduce my colleague.
Hello. Hi, everyone. I am Therese. I am the communications and engagement lead for Talking Therapies. So I have zero clinical background, and I'm just here to have a conversation with Dom. He said, hey, we're going to do a podcast. And I said, all right, I will be here to talk. So I'm just here to talk. So my views are obviously based on my experiences. It's not based on any knowledge on the clinical realm of therapy.
So I suppose one interesting thing to sort of start off sort of our conversation today, Therese, really, is what is therapy to you? And that was really interesting what you were saying then about that idea that, well, you don't have that clinical background. So actually, what is that like for you then? Like working, talking therapies, but then that concept of therapy.
Yeah, you know, I think it's very interesting for me. I want to start off saying that I grew up in a family background where therapy isn't something as in what we think of therapy, meaning talking to someone who has a background in it, meaning having a degree or having knowledge in the subject. I grew up in a culture where that wasn't a thing. So for me, when someone says therapy, I mean, I understand what we in the UK or even the NHS, when they use that term therapy. But for me, therapy was always trying to figure out a way to heal yourself. And healing doesn't necessarily mean going to speak to a clinician. Healing can mean getting yourself out of that situation. And that could be by going for a walk. It could be watching a movie. It could be playing an instrument, playing a sport. It doesn't actually have to be the one-on-one or group conversations that we hear think about when you hear the word therapy.
Yeah.
I mean, as someone who comes from a clinical background, what's your idea of therapy then?
I mean, like, it's very mixed thing because I think you've got to think of it a little bit of a sort of professional and personal stance. Yeah, because actually professionally, you know, I've worked in mental health since 2007.
Wow.
And I've worked in talking therapies. It was formerly known as IAPT before. So from 2017. So I worked for quite some time within the area of mental health and sort of supporting and helping people. And so for me, that idea of therapy sometimes can have a little bit of, you know, that professional stance of almost like a bit of a clinicalness, being, oh, okay, well, I'm here to sort of help support someone and they're here to help and get support for themselves through that structure of therapy. So whether it is that they would then engage in terms of helping themselves, or interestingly, that word that you used, heal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that can come in various different ways, shapes and forms. So in some ways there's like a clinical aspect in the professional sense, but actually personally, again, you know, it's that idea of that meaningfulness for someone, that actually that can be anything and everything, really. It almost fits a little bit into that concept of sort of spirituality, like what is meaningful for that person. And that can be very different in another sense to the clinical aspects of it. So, you know, because again, you know, there's that element of the things that I might do professionally to help the clients that I might see, but also then generally what I might do professionally in terms of therapy might be different to my personal side and sort of what I may want to do in terms of therapy itself.
Okay, so that's interesting that you brought that up, because I want to rewind a bit. So you started in the clinical field in 2007, right? So prior to joining this realm of clinical therapy, so to speak, what was your view on when you heard that question, what is therapy? What was therapy for you prior to getting into this clinical world of therapy?
Oh, that was when I was quite young then. A little bit more of an
young
old time
man.
analogy, so.
I'll get you your walking stick.
But yeah, back then, I think that, again, so it's that element of, because, you know, in revealing it all, you know, as I was 22 when I firstly started working mental health, and I started working in patient settings. It was sort of an open acute mental health ward, 21 patients. Because it was acute mental health services, it was sort of very sort of severe mental illness that was going on. And it was a very huge learning curve very quickly for me to be like, well, what is sort of therapy in this sort of sense? And it was a lot more clinical back there. But outside of that, as a professional, in the personal setting, you know, I just wanted to enjoy life as a 22-year-old.
Yeah, as most people do.
So it was very much more like, oh, okay, I'm going to spend time with my friends and the things that I enjoy. And that, in some ways, was a form of therapy for myself back then. But obviously, then starting in the mental health field and then building up in my experience, that started off my knowledge and experience of, wow, actually, no, therapy is a lot more than it just being like things that you might do for yourself. So examples are, you know, that, you know, talking about the personal sense is, well, actually, what's meaningful for me? Back then, it might have been going and spending time with my friends and getting that enjoyment. Whereas now it might be more about a self-care element for that. More of a, okay, so what do I then do that's looking after me that I enjoy throughout all the busyness of life?
It's still something in which you're doing alone and not seeking support from someone else, right? But now in your professional life, which is what you do, is you speak with clients and you offer them that support as a form of therapy. So why, how have you differentiated therapy for you personally and therapy professionally?
So, I suppose, you know, the professional sense, there's a lot more to, I suppose, guidelines. There's a lot more to what you're following. So, as a high intensity therapist, you know, we have, I suppose, NHS England, we have guidelines, rules, procedures that we all follow. That might be from the BABCP and elements of things like that, you know. Within our own service, we have sort of ways of being and ways of working that we would do. So I would then be following a lot more of those guidelines professionally. Whereas in a personal sense, it's like, okay, an example is that, you know, I have sought therapy for myself in the past because I went through a really difficult period. And actually, you know, it was a really big, hard thing to go and do, but I don't regret that whatsoever because it helped me as a person to be able to grow, to be able to then see and understand more about who I was and the difficulties I may have faced. And so therefore, actually, I'm then able to then work forward towards whatever that might look like for myself going forward. That then helps with other aspects of things, like I love music. And actually, some people may not consider that as a sort of thing of, oh, is that therapy? But actually, that's meaningful for me. That when I do it, it makes me then feel better about myself. It makes me feel a lot more like I am managing myself and I'm able to look after myself in a better way by engaging in things like that.
So when you said back when you did therapy when you were younger, therapy for you meant talking to somebody. Is that what you meant? And then music, you also use that word therapy in terms of music. So for you, therapy can be talking to someone or even self-care then. Is that what I'm understanding? Okay.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, completely. You know, because it, again, it's that, it comes to that question, but it is that thing that you were raising about that idea of what is therapy? Because actually, it just has meanings for different people at different times, you know. And if we think about the medical sense of it, therapy is very about psychological support and things like that. Whereas now, you know, we talk about it in a general context, actually, that isn't the case. I mean, what about for you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny as you're talking and I'm thinking about it as well. For me, therapy is I think it's also talking to people. So for example, I grew up in a household with three sisters, and we shared a room, we shared a bed, all of that until I was 18. So I was always around people. And of course, you know, in that household, it's never a moment to yourself. And because I shared a room, I couldn't even go in my room for a moment. And don't even talk about the bathroom. You're trying to go in the bathroom and people are there opening the door. Where can I be alone? So I think that when I got older, so I love traveling with people, but I also love traveling alone. And then I think as you're talking, so I've never been to the traditional therapist where you have a session with someone and they're talking to you. But I realize that I find therapy, so I love talking to people and meeting new people. And when I go traveling alone, that's the best part. Because normally if you travel with someone, you would be with them and you'll do things with them and it's always you and them. And when you're conversing with new people, it's usually with that person you know and them. But when you're traveling by yourself, you can be somebody different, meaning that you can offload on a stranger. And I've done this before many times where I'm sitting on a 16-hour bus somewhere and I'm just talking to the person next to me and we just talk about things. And so many times I've heard people tell me, oh, I've never told anyone this before. And I would say, gosh, I haven't recounted this story in a while. But you have that trust in a way because they don't know you, so they can't judge you. Yeah. And I would assume that's why people seek to speak to someone, not only because they don't know them, but obviously they have a background, a qualified background where they can actually implement some support that you want. But I have found that speaking with a stranger that you trust, meaning you guys are on the same journey together. You both are in a foreign country. You don't speak the language, but you're on the 16-hour bus.
Yeah.
So you have to have some type of trust because right now this person speaks my language and we're here together. We don't know where we're going to go, but we have each other. And that bonding, I find, creates that sort of therapy that I can tell them about. You know what? I'm traveling because I just need to get away from my family. They're doing this and that. And that person will tell me their experience. So I find that that is very therapeutic for me. And to me, I feel this is what people need to explore. In addition, not in addition, but maybe as well. Yeah. As in, I don't think therapy has to be seeing a clinician. I think there are various different ways of healing, but I understand that. I mean, certain healing it's not every person fits the same mold.
Yes.
But at least for this, for me, I'm like, okay, talking to somebody, looking at things, enjoying things you like you said, taking time for yourself. But
yeah,
I think you really need to know yourself to understand what works for you. But for me, I think that's very therapeutic, being able to speak to someone who understands you. Just have to make sure that they listen, because so many people, so you could talk to people, but you know, sometimes people are so quick to respond that they don't listen.
Complete. It's what you said, you know, some of those things to do with like connection, that actually you're not listened to, no one talks to you, you're not able to talk to another person. You've either got to find your own therapy in a different way, or likewise starts to cause problems then, that actually, hang on, someone's not listening to me, I'm not getting that connection, so therefore, oh, but am I getting the most from this? Am I healing? Am I changing? And so therefore, for you, you're highlighting a really useful, important point in any form of therapy is connection, that relationship with another person. That in itself can be like just magic gold dust in itself. And it's about sort of almost us highlighting that and valuing that. Because, and again, you're talking about as well those considerations about individual and collective. Because actually then being individual, like, well, I'm going to go and do all these adventures and everything, you're doing that on your own. And actually then it's about then how does that then serve that purpose for me in terms of therapy and for healing, for positive change, for growth, for happiness. But also then at the same time, how do I balance that with then other people and my connection with others? I think that's just really useful, interesting concepts to be able to transfer from professional, clinical to personal, whatever that might mean and look like. Because I was going to sort of also say, and just following on from what you were saying really about, you know, looking up and considering those words for what does therapy mean?
Oh, we're going that deep now. You're going. So right now, Dom has his phone out and he's actually looking up the definition of therapy. Okay.
Basically, what it is, it's any form of treatment for a disorder by method other than surgery. Such treatments in general. So, there's also meaning that is about, you know, it all comes from sort of a Greek word, therapai, which is about healing. So therefore, it's all derivative about that idea of it sounding quite clinical, but actually it not is not necessarily that. You know, that actually it matches what you were talking about with that healing process.
That's interesting how, and specifically said that does not require surgery. No.
Yeah.
It was very clear.
There was another thing that I was considering, right, when you were saying about the non-traditional forms. So then let me ask you about, say you were forced or had to do more traditional forms of therapy. How would that make you feel?
I would be fine with it.
Yeah.
I would be fine with it. Yeah, I have no reservation to doing it. I think my thing is that because mental health is so big now, meaning that everywhere you look, which is great, I think some people don't want to admit they have a mental well-being issues. And I think it comes from the stigma of their family, culture, or gender, however you want to put it. But I know that if it comes to a point where I feel that my methods of healing, they don't work anymore,
yeah,
I would be more than happy to go in and speak to someone or a group of people,
yeah,
and that can get to that point. I don't know if everybody explores such options of healing, like I'd mentioned, in terms of talking to strangers or going for a walk or you know, playing an instrument or listening to music. I think sometimes, especially in the West,
yeah,
it's always about go talk to someone, go talk to someone, go talk to someone. And that's the thing that I need to, even though I'm working with talking therapies, I don't understand that fully. Are we just programmed now in the West to say, go talk to someone? And we no longer have the resilience that our forefathers had, so to speak, or on the flip side, was there just not that support back in the day where someone really did need to speak to someone, but they're like, just get on with it? And you know, life is so much easier now. We can work from home. I'm not doing a back-breaking job where I'm out there 10 hours a day. I come home, I'm exhausted. I mean,
why not? Why are you not doing that, Charisse?
No, I'm guilty. I'm a diva, you know. The hardest thing I have to do is wake up in the morning, take a shower, and sit on my computer, you know. And my mom always said, she's like, because then I would be working at home and I'm working at the computer, she's like, oh, all you're doing is playing on the computer all day. Because for her, working was actually going out, doing a labor-intensive job and coming home. Whenever she saw me working on the computer, she's like, oh, you're just playing on the computer. No, mommy, I'm actually working. So I think that just little things like that, you can see the difference between their generation and our generation.
Yes.
And I think because of that, because of life being so much easier, mm-hmm, and you can easily look up things like, okay, mental health. But back then, you know how internet is now compared to how it was, let's say even 30 years ago.
Yeah.
We don't even have to go back 50 years ago, but 30 years ago, they just didn't have that opportunity. Cell phones, you know.
Yeah.
So I think, so that's where I'm at an impasse, so to speak. Is it because we're highlighting mental health more that people feel they need to speak to someone? Or is it because, yeah, we're just no longer resilient as we were because life is easier? I mean, you know, I complain, you know, my friend, I complain, like, guys, I have to travel all the way to Coventry for work. So I live in London. One day a week, I have to travel to Coventry. And they hear me like, guys, it's so difficult. I need to sit on a train and be warm. And,
yeah,
you know, these are my quote unquote first world problems. But it's, I can complain about that because life is so easy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm saying, that I just don't know if we as, you know, adults in this day and age,
yeah,
in the West, again, I'm saying in the West because it's different elsewhere. My family's from Trinidad and their concept of mental health is very different from how we view it here.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, so I don't know what's right or wrong.
Mm.
Maybe there isn't. Nothing has to be right or wrong. But just the outlook of what I'm seeing here is that it's always like, talk to somebody. But again, I think that's good. But I also think that's bad. So I don't know.
It's almost that sort of life evolution and awareness as well, isn't it? You know, that there's that idea of the more aware we become, the more that then do we need to do something about it or not? And the dilemma with that, you know, because actually it's amazing. It is brilliant. I would always promote, you know, awareness. You know, the more aware we become, the more that we can then help ourselves. However, though, there's impacts with that being, well, the more aware I become, hang on a minute, something that would not have normally been a problem, suddenly I'm then aware, is that a problem now? Is it not a problem? Do I need to do something about that? Do I not do something about that? Oh, okay, but if I start doing something about that, okay, that's brilliant, but does that cause me other problems? And then suddenly that's something so small, but now it feels really big, and then it can just snowball and snowball and snowball and snowball. And therefore, it's then almost that coming up with our own personal plans and what we want, and really about what's going to be helpful with that. Because within the mixture of all of that, I think you really highlighted some useful things about considerations of equality and diversity, and about that idea of, well, hang on, different cultures, different generations. We're living now in a digital world where 20 years ago, that was not as much the case. And so therefore, you think about your traditional therapy, you can do that online now. You can call up someone and be like, oh my gosh, I need that help. There's so much more access to everything now. And that's really good. But again, in some respects, it's also one, well, what's going to suit me with my equality and diversity? But also at the same time, where do I start? Where do I start? I have so much access that actually, oh my gosh, hang on a minute. Like, well, I could go and do this. I can do that. And then suddenly, are we overloading ourselves and then creating that vicious cycle over again about, oh, hang on a minute, there's so much on offer here, and what's a problem that I can deal with and not deal with? And it's just, there's lots of benefits and disadvantages to that concept of everything growing and evolving, and then talking and awareness. But then what is then normal that actually we can then just deal with, rather than having to suddenly then get support? Because also at the same time, it's that interesting thing about with therapy is also thinking, if I engage in it and I go and do that, well, what cost is there to that as well? Because actually one thing that comes to my mind is I start to become more reliant on everything and everyone else.
Oh, interesting.
When actually then, hang on, you know, that's why I love CBT. That's why I love the work that I do, because then it's almost that shared thing then about, okay, well, they want to get help and support. There's a risk of it being a bit more reliant. But hang on a minute. CBT is about self-help. It's about doing it to help ourselves. So therefore, I'm there to help someone who's looking for that help. But hang on, you're the person who's then doing this, having that support. You're your own self-therapist. I'm just here to be able to enable you to be that self-therapist even further.
So would you agree, based on what you're saying about CBT, promotion for CBT there? I saw that. I saw you bring that in. So do you think somebody, okay, so what is CBT for starters? Because everyone, you always hear this term everywhere. I'm pretty sure everyone who's looked up mental health or just hearing it, everyone's like, CBT, CBT. What is CBT?
Okay, so CBT, cognitive, which is a C, behavior, surprise, surprise, but behavior. So thoughts and behaviors. And it's about how our thoughts and behaviors affects how we feel. So when we're going through common difficulties, and that's a key thing I say to everyone, common. We all experience these things. Low mood, anxiety, stress, panic. That then, when we're going through those difficulties, we will find there are certain situations where it occurs in, or it's made worse. You know, say you're walking down the street and you feel okay. The likelihood is that then I feel okay. My friend is walking down the road, that then they just walk past me. They don't say anything. If you feel fine, you might interpret that in a fine way. oh, I wonder if there's anything wrong with them. Maybe I'll contact them later. But when we're feeling, for example, low or anxious, and we're in a situation like that, cycle starts off where we get certain thoughts that occur, which are the interpretation of those situations, following with that difficulty we're going through. So it might be negative thoughts, worries. That then makes us feel worse emotionally. So then feel even more anxious, more low, awful, rubbish. That then affects our behaviours. So we start to do more things to cope. We do less things to cope. We avoid things to cope. We then get physical symptoms occurring in our body because of our body's reaction, normal reaction, to that low mood or that anxiety we're having. But it's a vicious cycle. So it's just something that just goes round and round and round and round, worsening our thoughts, our behaviours, our emotions, our physical symptoms. So that's the premise of cognitive behavioural therapy. What we're doing with that, though, is we're understanding what is going on. What are these thoughts? What are the behaviours that we do that are keeping it all going? That then, okay, I'm understanding these vicious cycles. I'm understanding a bit more how this is being kept going. That's not something I can just take a magic pill and feel better. But then throughout that time, we're bringing in different strategies, different habits that we might be able to do in order so that then we're breaking these cycles, we're improving how we're feeling going forward, and we're having new habits in dealing with these vicious cycles and things we're going through.
So what you said sounds very easy, okay? I mean, no, it really does. And
very true.
And right, it's very explanatory, self-explanatory. So as someone, you and I, we both work for the NHS Talking Therapy Service, okay? And obviously our job depends on people using our service, supply and demand.
Yeah.
With there not being any demand, then there's no supply and there's no us. But in your opinion, based on the definition you just gave me of CBT and the different examples, can somebody Google this and treat themselves without having to use our service?
Well, technically, they could do in the sense of self-help. Because technically, if you Google something, you're helping yourself, aren't you? So you can find various different resources and things online that can help with that.
So why do people need to see you then?
Because it might be when their problems are causing more of an impact. So that's one reason, that it's just too much. And, oh, okay, but I tried to do this and hang on, this is really confusing. That actually that I'm feeling worse from this, or I still keep feeling the same. But also then there is that element of therapeutic connection, like we spoke about earlier, about that idea of, but actually, I may just be in a place I'm feeling too anxious. It's too confusing. I'm trying to do a bit of self-care for myself, and actually, I'm still feeling anxious just doing self-care. So sometimes it might be that actually coming and seeing someone like myself, that actually then it's a way of then me getting back on track, but then being able to help myself more. I just need to have a little bit more support to do that at this time. So that's how I sort of see it really, in terms of I'm almost a little bit like a coach, a little bit like an element of you go to the gym and you have your gym instructor where they're there to come up with a plan with you on what you want to work on and what you want to get better at in terms of your, you know, your physicality, your gym, your well-being in that respect. It's almost like I'm a little bit like that in terms of a coach.
So you're a personal trainer then?
I don't have the body for it, but I hopefully have the mind for it. So, but it's one of those things where I'm a little bit in that sense. Someone might come because actually they're having these difficulties. I'm here to help them understand that a little bit more, but coming up with a plan for them, the goals that they want to work on to then tackle these issues so that then these habits all get changed. And then they're able to then feel better, and then they can do that themselves going forward and continue that self-help journey. Then in the future, they may even more so go, okay, I notice I'm not feeling so great. I have some tools, strategies, understanding that can help me with that. Oh, but actually on this occasion, I may not need to go to the service. I may not need to go and see a therapist again at this stage. It might be I can just Google it this time. And then, everything I've learned from before, I can take that forward and then help myself further.
And yeah, No, I mean, what you're saying sounds really good in terms of you being that personal trainer, so to speak. But my question is, why you? So, for example, my friend, anytime he has an issue, he says, I'm going to talk to my pastor.
Yeah.
That's always his first thing. Yeah, I'm going to talk to my pastor.
Yeah.
And I've never spoken to a pastor, I mean, in terms of issues like this. But he finds it to be very therapeutic, very healing. Why not a pastor? Why you?
Yeah. Well, I suppose, again, that comes back to a little bit of the individuality. You know, that to me, you know, I suppose there's an anonymous element to it. You know, that you're talking about your friend and the pastor. Well, actually, they may know the pastor. They may feel really comfortable with the pastor. And actually, I'm going to go and get that help and support with that connectedness because I feel comfortable to do that. Some people may think, I don't feel comfortable going to my friends, to my family, to the pastor, to my doctor down the road. Instead, they may... And we do find that people, when they're having these difficulties, feel so alone. They feel so like, I don't know who to reach out to. I don't know who that is. And so I suppose with having the professional titles that I have and things like that, someone might feel a bit more comfortable to step forward and go, okay, you know what? I don't know you as a person. That's a big, huge, scary thing in itself. That's actually in some ways challenging yourself in order to help improve yourself as a starting point is, but some people might feel a bit more comfortable just to go, I don't know, but all I know is there's NHS talking therapies where they have clinicians that are there that know more so about some of the difficulties, the therapies that they may offer that I don't know. And you know what? I don't want to go to my mum. I don't want to go to the next person. They may not have that knowledge and support professionally to do that. So I may just feel a little bit more comfortable just to go to someone who I don't know that I can then build that rapport and that relationship with. And then, that helps me even further with then being able to help myself. Because a number of clients that I see that I've never ever met them in my life. I just know from information that I see about their case to help them. And I meet them for the first time. And the number of clients I've met were actually just going into that space, just starting to talk to me, is then that healing process as a start point because they're vulnerable. Oh my gosh, hang on a minute. But in some ways it might do things like start to force them to have to see the problem or force them to have to then talk about what that is rather than being alone and bottling it up and not knowing what to do. Suddenly then, that then creates an empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, actually, and not only that, you've got the psychological coach, i.e. me, who's then being your cheerleader, being like, next week I see you, feel a bit more comfortable. Oh, they've managed to do a little bit of something, a strategy or a task or something that they think is going to help them. Brilliant. Keep going. Keep doing it. You know, you're then trying to then cheer them on and giving that positivity whereby, that then promotes even more of the connection between us, building the trust, building, but also then their own sort of motivation, their own positivity in them and their journey that they're doing, that then, they'll do a little bit more, they'll do a little bit more. And, you know, it's such a rewarding thing in that sense. But that's why there could be that reason why, well, they may want to come to me rather than just go to the pastor.
Right. Or you can be building yourself up too much. For example, therapists, you all are great, but you all aren't the be-all, end-all. For example, during COVID, the government created this initiative, lockdown, right? We all had to stay in our homes. And this caused more mental health issues than, I mean, I don't have the stats to say than ever, but it caused a lot of mental health issues. And at the time, I was living in Brixton, so South London, a very robust, lively community. And the biggest thing was, you know, everyone's like, we got to be locked down. We have to, what was it? Was it 2 meters apart or?
2 meters.
Yeah. 2 meters apart, wear masks and everything. And people were really scared. But then on the other hand, so I was living with the flatmate. Him and I were vibing on the same thing. We're like, listen, we know, so around our area, we know a lot of elderly people. And when they don't go out, they don't see anyone for weeks at a time.
Yeah.
And we're like, you know what? We're going to go over it and check on them. We're going to have little community gatherings to stop people from experiencing these horrible mental health issues. Yes, in violation of the law. So yes, I'm going to out myself, but it's like, I know who I am. And, you know, I mentioned growing up in a household where there's always noise, always people around.
Yeah.
I could not imagine being locked indoors 24/7. It was unheard of. And the amount of people, so I felt really bad after the whole lockdown ended and everyone was like, hey, how are you doing? I'm like, I was great. Lockdown was great for me. I saw people, I hung out, and they're like, what? I'm like, the thing is, I know who I am.
Yeah.
If I isolate myself and go into cocoon, I would be miserable. And then I would need your service, for example. But now I don't need you because I had my people around me. And I think that, and that's going back to what I was saying, again, in terms of the resilience.
Yeah.
We, as an individual, we should know what works for us.
Yes.
You know, sometimes, for example, you said music. I love dancing, but I'm not a person who has music on their phone. I'm not a person who listens to music at home. When I go out to dance, I'm there dancing. And I only listen to music, you know, I'm in my car. I didn't have a radio for 2 years.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, what? How could you drive so long without? I'm like, because normally I'm talking on the phone to people. I don't need music. I'm just, it's there to dance. I don't have it in my normal day life. Yeah. So I know that I love music to dance, but I don't need music around me. While some people, every single thing, from the time they wake, my sister's like this, from the time she wakes up, well, I guess forever, there's always some type of noise in the background, whether it be a TV show, news, music. It's 24/7, and that's who she is. So because we know ourselves, I knew that I can do an isolated lockdown, like the way some people are like, yeah, I've just been indoors. I haven't seen anyone for 2 weeks. Yeah. What? What? And you're telling me you're surprised why you have mental issues? The government doesn't know the needs of everyone. Like anything, you try to create laws that can benefit most. And of course, their whole thing was to keep people alive, right? I mean, mental health was secondary, which I understand. But as someone who knows me, I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to still do what I got to do.
Yeah.
But of course, trying to be as good of a citizen as I can be. But yeah, so yeah, the resilience. So back to that thing with the whole resilience and people knowing themselves, COVID. But now people are looking for you now. Oh yeah, you know what? I was locked down for how many months, and now I need Dom, save me, personal trainer, save me.
But also, I think there's an interesting concept that you just said, which might be useful for us to consider really, is what if you don't know yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question.
What if you don't know yourself? Because actually, that, you know, it's really important. It's about ourselves. And if we know ourselves, brilliant. But what if we don't know ourselves? Actually, what considerations do there need to be for that? Or also then, how would that affect our resilience? How would that then affect what we want to get from therapy, from healing? Like, because that's the key thing. Sometimes people do come through the service and they don't know what they want. That's okay as well. But there is that element of us knowing ourselves, and then we can then know what is good for us and what isn't good for us. Also, another argument that might be within there, Charisse, is also that element of we may know ourselves, but also at the same time, does that mean that is helpful? That the things that we know and we do, are they actually helpful for us? A key thing that I always think about in my mind when I'm helping and supporting people is that idea of, like, if no change happens, what change is going to happen? And that idea of, like, if we know ourselves and we do the same thing all the time, we're always going to get the same thing and the same outcome. And it's then almost that awareness, that recognition about, well, what I do, that actually, is this helpful for me, both in the short term, but in the long term as well? That actually, I might decide I'm going to go out every Friday night with my friends and have a brilliant time and have a few drinks and everything like that. And that's all well and good in the short term, but what about in the long term? What impact could that actually have on me? And is that something I want to change? Because it's about what someone wants as well.
You see so many people that you understand the different dynamics of a human being. Yeah. I don't. Yeah. So I can only talk about myself. Yeah. And that's true. And don't you think some people, they like to be the victim? They like to blame others for their issues. They don't want to change. They say they do, but you clearly see they don't. They're making, like you said, going out every Friday. They know that Saturday morning doesn't exist. Basically, if they stay out until 6 in the morning, they're not going to be up until in the late afternoon, but yet they continue doing it. Some people I find like to complain about their situation just to have something to talk about. I know the joke is that Brits like to talk about the weather. Yeah. It's too hot, it's too cold, it's too rainy, it's too cloudy, it's, you know?
Yeah.
And I find it funny because, you know, anytime, no matter where you are, you talk to someone, always bring up the weather, we're good. It's But then a cup of tea can also be for something to celebrate or to help with sorrow, I realize. Everything is...
There we go. Yeah. Cup of tea solves everything. Yeah. That could be probably the best therapy that we can all offer. Yeah. Is a cup of tea and a listening ear.
Just a side note about the cup of tea, because when I first started with the NHS, and you know how you have meetings that go on for an hour and you finish in 50 minutes. And they would be like, oh, yes, so I'm giving you 10 minutes to put on the kettle and have a cup of tea. And everyone was so happy. And I'm like, this cup of tea thing. I used to think that it was just a stereotype, but no, you guys really like your tea.
There we go. That's why we're spilling the tea today. But I think some of the things you were saying as well, just then as well, like, I think it's really important when we're thinking about formal therapy, right? Spoken a lot about CBT. Spoken a lot about the whole choices, wanting, yeah, that actually some people may then have excuses for why they may engage in it or why they may not engage in certain things. But I think it's really important also to think of that element of with professional sort of therapy per such, is that there are different types of therapy in terms of that. And that key thing that some therapies are not going to suit certain people at certain times because of the fact it may not be what they want, may not be what actually is going to be helpful for them. Mm-hmm. We talk about CBT, but actually CBT, I would promote that till the day is ending because that's how passionate I am about it. But also at the same time, it is not for everyone. Mm-hmm. Actually, some people, for example, may need to do counselling.
And what's the difference between counselling and CBT?
So counselling is more about like having a space to talk about, understand, explore how you're feeling, why you're feeling like that. And it might be to talk about the past, it might be to talk about now, and anything and everything in between. But the key thing is it's about ourselves and about what we're feeling, what we're thinking, and processing that. So that then someone can then go away feeling a lot more like they're understanding what's going on for them. They may think of it in different ways. But actually some of the emotions that we've then felt from these things that have happened or what's happening now, that actually they're just not being processed as well as maybe it could be for that person. So that space is, you know, talking and exploring and then using what their understanding is and the counsellor that's there with them is there to help them with that journey with that. Whereas with CBT, it's a lot more sort of in the sense of strategies based. So it's very here and now. We touch on the past and what's going on, but it's more about the here and now and about we notice, we understand these difficulties that have come in and what's keeping it going, but what strategies and habits can we do to change? So a little bit more practical sense, CBT. And that's where it's like, well, actually, for some people, counselling would be probably more ideal because actually they may need to process maybe the changes that they've had for their emotions or what's going on for them rather than actually trying to bring in things to change stuff.
So would someone go through counseling and then they can do CBT or it would be one or the other?
We recommend for people to do one therapy at a time purely because it can start to interfere in each other and make things really confusing. Say for example, I went to counselling, I spoke about something really highly personal that's going to bring out a lot of emotions in me. I suddenly go to do a CBT session and suddenly then I'm having to then find a kitchen sink of strategies to try and help with how I'm feeling, which might not be something that we're even focusing on in CBT. And likewise, do some strategies and I go into counselling and then suddenly I haven't got those strategies that may necessarily be as helpful for the things that I'm processing in that space. So that's where we just sort of say one at a time, really, just so we're then being sort of we're doing the best therapy for ourselves that isn't then getting too overwhelming in that sense. But that's where it's about that element of what someone wants to get from things and what is going to be most helpful, because it links back to that question I asked you earlier about, well, what if then suddenly someone said, you are going to go and do that. You are going to go and do that therapy, but that might not be what you want.
Right. But then I guess also back to what you said is, what if someone doesn't know themselves? And I think I guess I don't understand what that means, because I feel that I know myself well. I know certain things that I would like, certain things I don't like. I know certain things that would affect my mood.
Yeah.
So I stay away from that. And or sometimes I engage in it just because I'm like, oh, why not? So I think, yeah, so I think that's, I think back to our original question, what is therapy? I think in the West, for sure, oh, I can't even say the West. Let's just say the UK. Let's say the UK. It's that we are, I think when people say what is therapy, immediately, I mean, I haven't done a poll, but I would think most people would say talking to a therapist. Yeah, so that's one thing. And I think because the NHS is so strong in the UK, I feel that mental health has a place. And therefore, people are thinking, oh, do I have a problem? I think now people start to create problems for themselves. For example, if you're at a job that you know it's wrong for you, you don't get on with the boss, you don't even do the job well, instead of saying, okay, I'm going to leave and find something else, you're like, oh, you know what? I need to take time off because, you know, for mental health issues. And I know I'm saying this being very blasé and making it sound like mental health is not an issue, because even everything that I'm saying, I know people struggle with mental health. I'm not saying that. I am in 100% in favor for people to seek support when they need it. I think my biggest thing is that, do people go to it too quickly? Life is not easy, okay? Life is a roller coaster. If life were easy, everything would be easy then, right? Because,
yeah.
But there's always going to be ups and downs. And I'm just thinking, looking at even my friends, some of my friends, my family, and I'm thinking, yeah, you don't have the resilience that our parents have, our forefathers had, that we just had to overcome certain things ourselves. It's not an issue where you need to talk to a therapist.
Yeah.
This is just my thought. But so I think that's why it's really hard for me to, yeah, what is therapy? Do people need to see you, Dom? Do people, should we be out of jobs? Okay, no.
No, don't make me redundant yet, Charisse, okay. But I think it comes back to the individual. I think that's one of the key messages that come from this discussion, is it comes back to the person about what is best for them, what do they want, but also then, is that normal? You know, what they're experiencing, what they're not experiencing, and then, okay, what's the best way for them to be able to get that therapy for them? And when we say that word about, you know, the professional and the personal for them, you know, because there are some people in life where they don't need to have any sort of professional therapy, because they may feel like what they do personally is enough for them. They may not even want to do anything. They may just want to live the life they really want to live it. But likewise as well is, some people may then want to have a little bit of professional help, and that's okay as well. And actually then, okay, what's going to be most helpful with the difficulty that you're having? And that, is this reasonable for that? Rather than elements of then, oh, okay, you may just need to sort of build that resilience towards it.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, because you see our waiting times. You are on the front line where people self-refer, and then you talk to them, you give them an assessment. So in all honesty, Dom, I'm putting you on the spot, because, I mean, your job depends on it, essentially. The people that you've assessed, do you think everyone qualifies for the service we offer in talking therapies, or do you feel some people utilize it as a crutch to get a sick note in order to take time off? What do you think, based on, I mean, because you've been in the talking therapy service for 7 years?
Yes, since 2017. So, yes. So, I don't necessarily think that everyone needs to have support through talking therapy, because you've got to think there's different levels of that as well within the service we work in. So there's, you know, booking in for an assessment and having an assessment. That's only one part, because then you've got the next part, which is then the treatment aspect. And so we do assessing people, you know, not everyone is going to come through for treatment through our service because of those different reasons about, you know, is it the right therapy for them in what's being offered? Are their difficulties actually matching what our service can offer? Because I always say to people, if they aren't suitable for support through our service, I will always say to people about things such as, it's because we will not meet your needs.
I know you say it in a diplomatic way, but have you ever told somebody in a diplomatic way, grow up or sort it out yourself?
I think I have never said it quite directly like that, Charisse, ever. But I've normalized it with them about the fact that actually what you've just said to me, that's going to be really normal that you would feel like this. If someone, I was to walk out in the street right now and get hit by a car, and then I was to then feel anxious about initially going and walking by a road, that might be really normal because I've just been hit by a car.
Yeah, of course.
Like if I suddenly just went out into, after being hit by a car, then I walked down the street and I was then jumping up and down for joy and being like, woohoo, that might be more of a concern that I would have to go, how are you dealing with that then? Because you've just been hit by a car. So actually, it's then that element of, hang on a minute here, like it's about sort of the perspective, but more about the balance of it all. That actually, that element of, if suddenly it's just someone's whispered to me something and I've taken it as a reaction of them like, oh my God, they hate me and they're bullying me and now I need to, that might be like just an overreaction to actually something that they may just need to have a little bit of space, a little bit of time, a little bit of calm. And then, like I said, on the flip side of it, something really awful happens, yet I don't even react to this. That then gives a little bit of question marks to things about what's going on. It's about that normality and about that, hang on a minute, things happen in life. And actually, sometimes it is okay and it is normal to feel like that. And actually, you might just need to settle with it.
You know, Dom, as you're saying this, I'm just thinking about my sister and I, we went to Australia on vacation and we were involved in a mall shooting.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh my God.
Because we're from the Los Angeles area and everyone's like, oh, there's so many guns in LA, you're gonna get killed. No, we were in the suburb in Australia and we were involved in a mall shooting. And my sister, and this is me being a bad sister that I never even thought of the therapy aspect. You know, my sister was terrified. I mean, I was scared because we weren't together. But when I finally found her, she was shaking. And never did I think, go speak to someone about this, because she was a little scared to go into malls for a few months. And never did I think, hey, go speak to someone. But it's kind of like what you said. This is a normal reaction. I never said, oh, you're being silly. Why don't you come into the mall? She's like, yeah, I'm scared of these open places, because we were in a food court in a mall. So it was two levels and the person was shooting from upstairs. And oh, it was a nightmare.
So an interesting thing to just to ask really is, what if she wasn't fine about it now still? What would you sort of consider or say to her?
Oh yeah, 100%. You need to speak to someone, because that definitely is PTSD. 100%. 100%. I never mastered to that at all. I mean, I knew that, yeah, I guess I knew it was PTSD, but I just figured, okay, it'll pass. And it did pass over a few months. It probably could have passed sooner if she spoke to someone about it, but.
Another thing I was going to ask as well is that idea of, like you were saying then about that whole thing of, oh, you know, someone has a bit of stress, but oh, I need to suddenly then lack of resilience. And then it's, oh, I need to get a sick note and those things. But actually then, like, at what point would you then maybe go and get a little bit of help? For example, if, say, for example, you were scared of spiders and initially you'd be a little bit scared, but then we come to now and then it's, you literally cannot be in a room with anything that is to do with spiders and it's causing that much of an impact in your life, at what point would it be pretty a useful way for us to then think, I need to go and get some sort of help at that point?
I think for me, and I could not be like stay in a room like this because I would think that there could be a spider in here. Or you wait, that's what you mean? Or
to be fair, we'll both be running out of the room because I'm not a fan of spiders either. But
I think it would take for someone to point it out for me. I would tell myself, oh, come on, this is ridiculous. You know, get on with it. But if someone pointed out and said, hey, you know, this is not normal for you to be that scared of spiders, I think that's what it would be. Because in my mind, I should be able to overcome it. And again, this is back to the nature nurture thing. I think that I just grew up in a household where it was like, okay, you just get over it, or and that's it. But it's not in any negative response to my parents. You know, they didn't know. And even now, as an adult, as somebody who's working in talking therapies, I still can't see it as black and white. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, yeah, it would definitely take a point where someone would say, hey, you really need to go talk to someone about that.
Yeah, because I only bring that up just purely because we're talking a little bit about issues such as post-traumatic stress disorder, such as phobias, mm-hmm. and how it starts off with little things like that, where it could be quite normal for us to experience those things. And actually, it might be about us then using our own self-therapies for ourselves to help with that. But it's then about that consideration of, okay, that's normal. But when does that start causing impact where, hang on, this might be where I need to go and get some help for this because it's causing such an impact in my life. And that's useful for you in terms of hearing that, that actually might have to get to a point where it's causing such an impact that someone has to tell me that, hang on, you need to go and like help yourself in some sort of shape or form. But it's interesting, that idea of that, but how therapy and the ideas of therapy might sort of then fit within that as well.
Yeah. I agree. I think, yeah, definitely the nurture and nature. And I think that everything is through experiences, right? So I think that, yeah, what is therapy? It will always be something different for everyone based on what they're used to, what they grew up with, what they've seen, what they've lived with. But I think either way, as long as somebody does do something to support themselves in healing.
Yes, that is the key thing, whether it's professional or personal. The main thing is it's about them and what is therapy for them. And if they're not sure, then it's about then exploring that.
Cool. Well, Dominic, thank you for this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you, Charisse, for spilling the tea with talking therapies and me. So thank you. And we'll now go and get a cup of tea and have a little bit of therapy together like that.
Cup of tea to solve everything.
Thank you, Charisse.
Thanks, Dom. See you soon.